Hi, you're listening to DebtWired. I'm Amelia Weitzman, the private credit reporter at DebtWire's New York office. And this episode, you'll hear from Matt Schwartz, a partner and practice group leader at DLA Piper's US Finance Group. We'll discuss the intersection of AI and private credit, from sourcing and underwriting to negotiation and monitoring. Matt will share his insight into what's already changed and what's coming next. Thanks so much for joining me, Matt.
Hey, Amelia. Thanks for having me.
Let's start at the top. So when did you first start to see AI creeping into the private credit market?
It's been a few years now. We saw the rise of outsourced, directed tools being directed into the private credit market. But it's really snowballed in the last 18, 12, 6 months. It seems the pace at which AI adoption within private credit firms or within the private markets in general is accelerating much faster than I think people had even anticipated.
How do you think AI will drive long-term opportunities in private credit, and how will it reshape the deal lifecycle to your mind?
I mean, I think it's going to impact every aspect of the deal cycle, from sourcing to closing deals, to monitoring, to compliance, to what happens when things go bad, much in the way that AI is impacting every other workflow, every other process in virtually every business right now. We're at sort of a reformation with AI where it's getting integrated in every work stream, no matter what you do, there's an AI process. And so similarly to the way text messaging or email completely changed the way we communicate, I think AI will completely change the way in which funds raise money, the way in which they allocate their assets and conduct their investments, the way they do due diligence, the way they monitor their portfolio, the way they adjust risk allocations. It's going to impact every work stream from top to bottom. In fact, I don't think there is a work stream in this process in the market that isn't going to be impacted by technology and or AI. It won't all be impacted by Gen AI, but tech, agentic AI are going to impact virtually every work stream.
I have to ask you, what about the highly sensitive nature of private credit data? How do you get comfortable with giving AI this information, and does it breach any codes?
I think data protection and privacy becomes even more important, and I'm not a data protection or privacy lawyer, but having processes and systems to protect your data from data breaches and or intentional or casual disclosure are even more important than they've ever been. It's also going to be incumbent on the AI providers to operate within existing data privacy constraints to figure out how do we make this happen in a way that protects data the way we need to. Law firms have been under extremely scrutinous rules for client data protection. So we've been dealing with this for a long time. The reality is the protection of the client data hasn't changed. It's just a question of who are we giving access to it, and how do we make sure that they're following the same protocols that we would internally?
And from your vantage point at DLA Piper, what are the most compelling use cases where AI tools are being actively applied within private credit workflows already?
As an attorney, you like to see data, you like to see AI being used as part of the diligence process to try to bring in as much publicly known information as possible on the front end. I think that by using AI to assess companies and the public information that's out there about them, it'll be easier to gather what is already readily available information in the public sphere. So using AI and just technology in general as a tool to gather more data about your investment opportunities, I think will be interesting to folks. Using technology and AI to not only write but underwrite credit memos and investment memos and bring that to various investment committees is going to highly impact the way deal flows work. Using technology and AI to gather data once a deal is on the table and execute the documents for that deal more efficiently and quickly is going to be a major impact. And then once a deal is closed, using tech and AI to monitor both compliance, monitor the portfolio, monitor risk allocation, look out for risk allocation in the future to look for, is a portfolio still in the right balance? I can't really say that it's going to impact one more than the other, because I think up and down the stack, no matter what you do, if you work at a fund, whether you're on the front end, on the fundraising piece, on the investment piece, on the compliance monitoring piece, on the credit piece, you're going to use technology and AI to help make you more efficient, to use data more accurately and efficiently, and to help companies either monetize the data that they have or use that data to help them make better decisions.
And what to your mind will be the main challenges of allowing AI to play a role in private credit? Do you foresee a situation where staff members could be made redundant or huge teams shrinking?
I don't think huge teams will shrink. I think that these are tools that help people be more efficient and do their job better. So I think if you're not great at your job and not able to use these tools, you're going to be less efficient than your counterparts who are great at using these tools, right? So it's important to understand that these are tools for human beings to use to be better at doing what they do. This is a capital intensive business. Both the fundraising side, the deal sourcing side, the relationship building piece, understanding who the players are in the market, all of that is capital and human intensive. These are tools to help people do their jobs better. I think the market is growing. So I think it will just probably grow slower in terms of the number of people that will need to be hired. I don't think it's going to cause the market to shrink. I do think, however, it's going to narrow the pool of people who are eligible to competitively play in this space, because you will have to have a fundamental understanding of how technology impacts what you're doing. And if you don't, you're going to have a hard time keeping up.
From the lender side, how might AI alter negotiation dynamics, for example, in contract drafting or amendments or bespoke covenant structures?
Yeah, I think that's a TBD still, because I think we're in the early innings, to use a baseball phrase. I do think, however, that by having better information on the front end, by having better predictive analytics, by having tools that help you foresee how a particular situation might play out, it will be easier to create bespoke covenants. It will be easier to create bespoke documents that not only are unique, but are much more applicable to the situation that the company is in. We'll be able to use trends from the past to predict the future more effectively than we can now. And so when it comes to making credit decisions, technology and AI should be able to help us better assess risk, which is what credit is all about, right? It's about how do you price risk? And if we can better assess what the risk is or what the risk factors are, that risk can be better price adjusted.
When a fund invests in a borrower whose business model is heavily dependent on AI or data infrastructure, how should the lender assess and incorporate that tech risk as part of the credit analysis?
I think it's a sliding scale right now. There are very few businesses that don't have an AI component to them right now. Very few businesses that are raising money are using AI, whether it's tangentially, as a wrapper, as a core part of their service. So I think understanding how does AI play into the core business is important. Once you figure out how key it is to the business, then you've got to sort of analyze, okay, how do you compare to your other competitor set? Do you have something that's truly unique to you? Are you using someone else's AI tools in a way that's unique? How likely is it that someone else could come up with a better, faster, smarter idea in the next period of time? Are you a likely acquisition candidate for a large group that's looking for this tool? So I think a lot of it is doing the traditional risk analysis for the business and figuring out what are the risk factors unique to this business, right? In which way, how core is AI to the business? Because every business is using it. So you have to figure out, is it a core piece of the business or is it a tool that they're using to deliver the core piece of the business? Once you figure it out, is this an AI business or is it a business that's using AI as a tool? Then you have to look at how does it stack up to others in their industry. If, for instance, it's an agricultural business that's using an AI tool, you're really going to compare it to other agricultural businesses, right? If, however, you have an AI company that's specifically just doing AI and one of the verticals that they operate in is agriculture, you're going to look at that differently. It's going to be compared more to another AI business. If I don't know if that makes sense or if that's the right comparison.
Sure. And from a credit fund, just beginning to experiment with AI, what would you say are the easy wins and the critical pitfalls to avoid from a legal and operational standpoint?
Yeah. So look, if you're just starting and you're a small fund, you're obviously going to buy versus build. You're not going to build an in-house AI product for a smaller fund. So you're going to go out and sample the ones that are out there. So I think it's important to, this is a great place to call up your friends to work at other funds and see what's working for them. Call your lawyers and see what's working for them. And probably start with the leaders in the market and do a demo with each of them and see what they offer. See what questions they ask. You know, you also really need to consider, if you're not using AI, what functions do you think are operating least optimally, right? Some companies are great at sourcing. Some are great at credit underwriting. Some are great at portfolio monitoring. Some outsource some of those functions, right? What could you outsource? What could you keep in-house? Do you want to outsource your agency function to a third party who's already using an AI tool that you could use? So I think knowing yourself and knowing what your strengths and weaknesses are is really important. You can't just dive in and just go, hey, we want to start using AI. You have to really look at yourself and go, okay, where do we think we can make the most improvement? Are we great at doing the underwriting, but not so great on the credit monitoring? Are we great at the credit monitoring, but could we improve our underwriting? Do we want to use that as part of our sales process? I think especially for a smaller shop, if you're a larger shop, you're going to probably want a tool that helps you with and integrates all of those pieces. If you're a smaller shop, you're going to want to look really hard and go, okay, where do I think I can gain the most efficiency, the most improvement by using a new tool? Also, who are most likely to adopt, right? Are my credit folks most likely to adopt? Are my salespeople most likely to adopt? Because you have to have buy-in from your folks on your end if you want the tools to work. You could have a great tool. If the people aren't willing to use it, you're going to be in a tough shape. So I think taking a holistic look at your organization and really being honest about where can you have the most impact, who are going to be internal champions for this technology, and then trying to start there and build from there.
Are there any credit shops that spring to mind when you think about who is winning the race right now with AI integration?
No, I don't think so. I can't say that one has beaten the other, because I think for the same reason that everyone is, even a large, look across the large asset managers, very large asset managers. Some of them are building their own internal tools. Some of them are buying tools. Some of them are doing both. Most of them are doing both, right? Law firms as well. Some are building internal tools, buying external tools, and then trying to figure out how to mesh them up. Each of them has a different objective as well, right? They're looking at their internal teams and saying, where can we create the most efficiency? So I think it's too early to say X firm is winning versus another. I think it's way too early in the game to figure that out. And by the way, my guess is there will be lots of winners and lots of not so winners. And it will be a trend. There'll be small funds that use technology and AI to succeed. There'll be large funds that use technology and AI to succeed. There will be ones that don't optimize as much. But I think there are going to be multiple iterations. Say you bring a tool on board and you don't like it. Okay, you've lost however much time and money you've spent. But 6 months from now, there'll probably be a tool that was better than that tool anyway, or the tool that you were using is going to be improved. So I think it's going to be a constant iterative process, certainly for the next handful of years. It's 2025. But maybe by 2030, there'll be winners and losers. But I think it's going to be a race that's going to be very hard to call early, especially for groups that have major billions of dollars worth of funds. You look at the biggest asset managers out there and who's backing them. There's a lot of money out there. So if at first you don't succeed, I believe they'll try again.
Okay. I'll ask you in another 5 years and we'll see. Looking ahead, let's say 3 to 5 years, how do you see the integration of AI in private credit evolving? Are we heading towards more automation?
Yes. I think agentic AI is leading towards tasks being automated. And I think that's actually a good thing. If you want to get from A to B and B to C and C to D and D to E and make sure that all of those steps have been followed in the process, agentic AI can really help there. It's also it's a tool to help people take less time to double check that, right? Have all these steps really been followed? Can we go back and see the code that was followed to make sure that they've all been followed? Do people trust that each of those steps were followed in that process? So the better this the better the technology gets, the more adoption we get, the sharper the knives will be. Let's put it that way. There's a whole series of tools. The sharper those tools get, the more likely your average person is able to use them effectively. If you have a bunch of dull knives, no matter how good you are in the kitchen, you're not going to be able to cook very well. If you have a bunch of super, super sharp ones, your average person may not even be able to use those, right? So you have to get to a point where like people are getting good at using the tech and the tech is responsive to them. So it's a bit of a back and forth, because as you have people who are adopting technology, whether it's AI or any other type of technological tool, agentic AI, gen AI, it doesn't really matter. You're going to have adopters who are far down the curve and those who are far behind. The real question is, how can you get the laggards who are far behind to pick up the pace? Do they drop off, or do those people not, are they not able to work in jobs where adopting tech is going to be super important? I do think you will have a rush of younger folk. Look, take folks around my age. I'm going to be 50 this year in 2026. We're right on the borderline of having been born in the technology era and being very comfortable with using tech. There are people older than me who still aren't comfortable with emails, who still keep handwritten chef lists on their desk, who still have to print pieces of paper up and write notes on them by hand. Those folks are, not dying off in a Jed way, but they're aging themselves out of the technological world we live in, right? Most people aren't doing that these days. And there's a whole age of AI digital natives who are coming into the workforce who are super comfortable with AI in every aspect of what they're doing, right? So I think the next 5 years are going to be really important there. As people who are a little bit senior to me age out of the workforce, we're just aren't able to keep up with the pace of technology, you're going to have a whole new rush of folks coming into the workforce who are very comfortable with that technology. I think a little bit of it is that you've got a five-year window here, where, say, in 5 years, I'll be 55. The people who are older than me who can't handle the tech will be retiring. The people my age who can handle the tech will stay relevant, because we'll not only, even though we're not native to it, we'll have adopted it, we'll have learned about it, we're learning about it now, we're able to use it and deploy it. But the age of AI native folks is here, right? The current crop of investment bank analysts, of analysts at funds, at equity funds, at private equity funds, at debt funds, at structure funds, their younger folks who are coming in are AI native. It's part of their work DNA. They're expecting to use AI as part of what they're doing. We have a bit of a transition period here where people are scrambling around. Very soon, within the next 5 to 7 years, the majority of workers in the workforce will be AI natives.
Basically, get with it or get out.
It's just certain industries. Let me put it this way. I can speak to the legal industry because that's where I live. I know we're not talking about that specifically, but when you think about the legal industry and you think about what lawyers charge per hour, if I can go to a client and go, hey, look, this used to take me 4 or 5 hours to do. Now with technology, I can do a better job and I can do it in less than half the time. Sure, my billing rate has gone up 30 or 40% the last 5 years. But overall, it's costing you less for me to do a better job at this. That's an easy sell for me. Very difficult to go to a client and go, hey, my billing rate's gone up 30%, but I haven't gotten any more efficient because I'm still using a yellow notepad and LexisNexis to do my research. So technology is a great differentiator in terms of efficiency. And in businesses like law, leads for a debt fund, say a private credit fund or even a private equity fund, filtering down the leads where they're spending their time by using technology makes them more efficient. So they'll be able to do more deals in the same amount of time. I just think efficiency, we're getting to an age where even if you don't bill by the hour, you bill on a project basis, people are expecting that something's going to cost X. The more efficiently and well done, if I can do X more efficiently than my competitor, either as well or better, that's going to translate into success in the new economy, in everything in the private markets, whether it's sales, originations, credit monitoring, portfolio managing, fundraising, investment decisions, all up and down the life cycle. Using technology for the human beings to be more efficient and do things at least the same quality, hopefully better quality, in less time, that is what will lead to success. So people who are able to use those tools will be more successful than people who are not.
I wonder if everyone's using the same AI tools, how do you differentiate between the great minds versus just people that are coming up with the same answers?
Imagine yourself in the kitchen with Gordon Ramsay and, I don't know, pick your other favorite chef, Bobby Flay, and then a bunch of random people who have come out on the streets. You can give them all the same tools. They have the same knives, the same bread machines, the same ovens, the same ingredients, right? What matters is how the person uses those tools. So again, it's AI is just a tool. Even the robot that you talk to is just a tool. This is a human capital business, right? It's not building housing units. It's not a factory floor. There are going to be places where robots can do a better job than human beings. I don't believe the private markets or private credit, fund formation, fund creation, asset allocation, fund monitoring, building relationships with entrepreneurs, building relationships with the investors that invest in them. I don't see anytime soon that human capital being replaced by a robot. I do see tools helping those people be more efficient at what they do and making the process better and more efficient. So for the business that we're talking about, I don't see tools replacing people per se. I see tools making people better at what they do and expanding the market. There are going to be companies that may have never gotten private capital investment before that now are going to seek private capital investment because the market is more efficient and more tailored toward them, and you're able to reach them. For instance, one space I think will probably blow up is microloans, right? Microlending with AI, small market lending, you know, $10,000 to $100,000 small business loans. Somebody's going to figure out how to use AI to perfect how to make those loans, and companies that wouldn't have gotten them, the market will grow. Right? Same thing with other industries, whether it's defense tech, satellites, data centers, fintech, actually lending to AI companies, pet care, veterinary care, dental care, up and down the board, how people exercise, how people get their food. AI is going to impact all of these industries. How the actual capital stack gets developed, I don't see a formula doing that outside of human beings. Human beings are still going to be using these tools to make them better at what they do.
Thank you, Matt, for that deep dive into this unfolding story. And thank you to our listeners. If you've missed any episodes, please visit iTunes or Apple Podcasts to catch up on DebtWired. Thank you and bye for now.